Coming up on episode 247 of Wheel Bearings, we've got the BMW M240i, the Volvo XC60 Recharge, the Mazda 3 with the turbo, our first drive of the new Nissan Z. Lordstown finally sells its plant, Ford selling off its Rivian stake, and Scout is coming back as an electric SUV. All that and more coming up next. Did you know you can support Wheel Bearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia. This is episode 247 of Wheel Bearings. I'm Sam Abual Samet from Guidehouse Insights.
And I am Nicole Wakelin, and we're going to stick with the Fast Women podcast at Newsweek.
And I am Roberto Baldwin from Engadget. It's the English gadget. I don't know what Engadget means. I worked there for 5 years. No idea.
They made it up. It doesn't mean anything.
Yeah. That Gizmodo. Yeah. Doesn't make any sense. Just a word.
Yeah. One Engadget was just a reaction to Gizmodo's creation. You know, Gizmodo came out there and started doing well, and so I think Peter Rojas started Gizmodo, left and hooked up with Jason Calacanis and started Engadget to compete with the one he started with.
So good times.
Yeah.
There you go.
Anyway, enough of the tech blog history. What have you been driving, Robbie?
This week I have been driving the BMW.
Well, it's probably better than an alphanumeric name.
Yeah, it's the BMW 240i. This is BMW's tiny little sport coupe. It is a fun little machine. It is an actual coupe. It is not a coupe with four doors. It's a coupe with two doors.
Not a grand coupe. Small.
It's not the Grand Coupe, which they also have. They have a four-door Grand Coupe, which, sure, why not? this is part of their two-series coupe. It starts at $48,550. It is not cheap, but it is fun. It's got a three-liter twin-turbo inline-six. That inline, you know, BMW makes, let's just say, the world's best inline-six. Let's just say that. And it is an all-wheel drive. It's X-Drive. It does not have a manual transmission anymore.
Oh, bummer.
This latest generation, the 2 Series lost the manual transmission. So you get paddle shifters, and of course you get, you know, automatic. That's my heavy sigh for the loss of the manual transmission on the 2 Series.
That's
I like the 2 Series a lot, just top to bottom. I think it's a fun it's the epitome of what the 3 Series was for decades, and now it's, you know, that number's gone down, I guess. As the 3 Series
as everything gets bigger, you know,
they
got to keep introducing new ones from the bottom to fill in the gaps.
They had the 1 Series here for a little while in the early 2000s. My friend had one. He liked it. He sold it, but he liked it. This is the M240 coupe. It gets, let me tell you what they tell you it gets, combined 26 miles per gallon. I haven't done a lot of back road driving yet with it, so I was getting about 27 miles per gallon. I've been doing a lot of freeway driving. I've had a lot of errands to take care of, and typically what'll happen is I'll do an errand, I'll go to the place. And then on the way back, what I'll do is I'll set my navigation to home, but avoid highway or avoid freeway. And if you do that in Northern California, you're going to end up on a windy road is what's going to happen. Yesterday, I ended up having to do far more errands than I anticipated. I had a lot of stuff. I had a lot of junk in my trunk at that point. And the idea of
that was literal.
Yeah, I had literally a lot of junk in my trunk, and I had to get home quicker than I was out longer than I anticipated. And the idea of just all that stuff sliding around in the back of the vehicle seemed like a bad scene. So I haven't done a lot of back roads driving, and this this time, but I have driven this vehicle before. I drove it in Palm Springs with BMW. They have a big test fest every year. They bring out all their cars, and you just take turns. Like, you get in a car, and you drive it for, like, an hour and a half. And you get in a car, and you drive it for an hour and a half. And you get in a car, and you drive it for an hour and a half. And then they also have cars that you can drive on the track, which is really fun. And that's where I got to do the Mini SE on the autocross course, and I didn't do very well.
But did you have fun?
I did have fun. I did have fun. I like to say that I am a better driver than your average person. But when it comes to automotive journalists, I'm like maybe in the middle, maybe top-ish middle. But there are some people who are far better than I am. I went on a drive program where it was just me and Tim Stevens doing like performance driving, and that was just.
No contest. Well, I mean, yeah, Tim's used to racing his Subaru around on a frozen lake.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, Tim knows car control.
And Tim's like the nicest person in the world. So it's also fine when the nicest person in the world is doing better than you. You're like, it's fine because he's the nicest
nice.
Person.
He's you like nice. Him.
Yeah. You're like, oh, okay, cool. This is a fun car. This is, I don't know if I've said this on the podcast before about this vehicle. This is the vehicle when you have a BRZ or a Miata or, you know, something like that, and you want to sort of step up. You want something with a little more luxury. You want to step up in the world. You still want that fun drivability, but you want to, like, move up a little bit.
A little more premium.
A little more premium is what you're getting with this. And you don't want to go to the, you know, you're like, yeah, I don't need anything flashy like the Supra or the Z or anything like that. I want something that's... feels a bit more adult, but it's not quite adult. It's like your late 20s. Like that's like when you're an adult, but you still want to go out and jump off cliffs and stuff. That's what I like to call the 2 Series. So this is the M240i. It's all wheel drive. Now they also have the 230i coupe, which is cheaper. It starts at $36,350. It has a smaller engine. It has a an inline four, still twin turbo. It's 2 liter, but it's rear wheel drive. And I've driven both of these, and this thing it's the 0-60 in the 240i is 4.1 seconds. The 0-60 in the 230 is 5.5 seconds. And you're thinking to yourself, well, that's a lot of time. But you know what? You're also getting rear wheel drive. And having driven both of these cars. If you are a fan of rear-wheel drive, if you like that little extra playfulness, and you can turn off the traction control, it's a really screaming deal, actually. I mean, you're not going to have that speed that you would have with the M240i, but I actually really like the 230i. I think I might have liked it better.
Really?
Yeah. And you know, this is the same thing I had with the old 2 Series, the previous generation, where I like the less powerful version of the vehicle better. Because it weighed less, because, you know, smaller engine, and it was rear wheel drive. And, you know, that one had a manual transmission. So if you're looking for a manual transmission, you got to look in the used car section. it really kind of comes down to what you're looking for. If you want something that's a bit more tossable, maybe not as powerful, you know, the 230 is a great little car. If you want something that, you know, all you think about is power and going in a straight line and... You know, the 240 is the one to get. Either vehicle is going to make you happy. If you're looking for that sort of traditional ultimate driving machine when you're driving in the BMW.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you miss the old, you know, E36 era 3 Series, yeah. You know, the 325i of the early to mid-90s, you know, this is the closest you're going to find to that, you know, especially that 230. With the 4-cylinder, it's actually more powerful than that 325 was, but you know it's closer in size. It's to that 3 Series of that era.
Yeah, you get this nice short, you know, shorter wheelbase. This nice lighter vehicle. It's tossable. It's fun. You know, it's a 2-door coupe. It's definitely not for your family. You could put kids in the back if you needed to. If you have car seats, well, good luck. If you have smaller children who are I don't even know how old the kids have to be while they're in car seats now. It's like 12, 13? Is that
how long? You're supposed to be 12 years old, and I think, but there's also a 12 or.
I made that up. Yeah. I didn't realize.
I think it is, because if you are a certain height, like if you have an exceptionally tall kid, yeah. If you're old enough that your
height and weight.
The seatbelt hits the right spot and you're the right weight and your legs bend at the seat instead of like sticking straight out.
They don't have that little booster seat.
Yeah, the booster lets it bend, but if your legs just bent, so there's, yeah, but they say at about 12. So nice guess.
Wow. So anyways, yeah, there you go. So if you have I just think of a 13, if I had a 13-year-old, they'd be just be like lanky and awkward.
I don't think I know many 12-year-olds that have made it that far, like, because they're too big. I mean, there's a point where putting them in a car seat and it's stupid because like you don't fit in it. I feel like it's doing more harm than good. But as long as the seatbelt, like, you have to be the certain weight.
It's appropriate.
Even if you're a chubby kid, you made a weight. If you're too short still, if the seatbelt like hits their neck, if it's not like be on an adult,
yeah, you want
not good.
You want it going over the shoulder, not across.
Right, you want it going over the shoulder, and you want their legs to be able to bend at the knee to hang over the seat, not still be sticking straight out, because that's not good in an accident. They should be able to bend.
Yeah,
so once they're.
All right, that makes all that makes sense. And I just remember the seatbelt that I had when I was a child was my mom putting her arm out, because no one used a seatbelt in the 80s.
My mom did, because she was a nurse. You want horror stories to make you wear a seatbelt even back in the 80s? My mom has got them.
Yeah,
she was a proponent of seatbelts from the time I was a little kid.
Yeah, I didn't have a nurse mom. So the vehicle I had with all the bells and whistles that they, you know, typically will give us, $57,295, so more. More than the $48,550. A lot of that stuff, you know, there's the driver's assistance package. It gives you adaptive cruise control. It's $1,500. And then they have a premium package with heated steering wheel, heated front seats, heads-up display, live cockpit stuff, $2,750. If you live in, say, an area where the temperatures – if you live in California, essentially, most of California, you probably don't need this. You know, unless you really love heads-up displays, the heated seats and stuff. Heated seats are great when you hurt your back in California, or if you go snowboarding. And the destination's only $1,000, $995.
That's like a downright bargain these days.
And this one was built in. This one was built in Mexico. It's one of the Mexico-built vehicles. Maybe that's why it's cheaper, but that's probably. Everything, you know,
just for reference, as you were saying those prices, I decided to look up E36 M3s on Bring a Trailer. And the current highest price for a 32,000 mile 99 M3 went for $52,000.
So you can get so 52. And let me pull up the price of the 230i. This is the rear wheel drive, 36. So $12,000 less? No, 52.
Yeah.
All right. So that's $16,000 less.
Here's one that sold for $30,000. So, you know, you could have brand new M240i with all the options, or
230i for 36, or 240 for 48.
Yeah.
Or you can have an old car.
You guys have become the Charlie Brown people again. All I'm hearing is the wah, 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 as you're going through all the numbers.
Yeah. So,
yes. It's a lot of numbers.
As long as you're not getting hosed by a dealership,
Well, good luck with that.
So that's the BMW M240i, a fun, tossable vehicle for people who want, you know, like superpower but don't want...
Superpowers? Does it give you superpowers?
Supra.
Is that on?
No.
Okay.
It's like, hey, you like the Supra, but you want to look like an adult? Here you go.
Well, and your car. I mean, the Supra literally has the same engine that's in that M240.
I know. That's what it's built by
BMW.
Shh. Don't give all the secrets out, Sam.
Get all the secrets out. The Supra's a fine car.
It is.
It's a cool car. I like driving the Supra.
Yeah.
But I know a lot of friends who are just like, no. Look at it.
Why? Just because? Oh, because of the looks?
Because of the looks.
Yeah. I like it. I like a Supra.
I think that it's daring. I'm happy that a manual transmission is finally coming to the Supra.
I know. Do you like it better? Do you like it better now that there's a manual transmission coming?
I like everything better when it has a manual transmission. That's
an acceptable answer.
And don't send me Twitter messages. Well, you know, the automatic transmissions are now, you know, they switch gears much quicker than the average. That's not the point. Being faster than an automatic transmission is not what it's I'm not talking about.
Yeah. That is not the goal. If that's what you think the goal is and you don't get it.
Yeah.
How's that?
All right. Nicole, what about you? What was your goal?
Okay. My goal was I had two cars this week. Actually, one last week that I'm talking about now, so I'm just late to the game. So last week I was driving the Volvo XC60 Recharge T8 Inscription, because the more words in your name, the cooler your car.
And the more you can charge for it.
And the more you can charge for it. It's like by the letter, you can just charge more for this than 90% of cars that are on the market right now. So plug-in hybrid, which I've become a huge fan of. Like, I think that little extra, you know, it's not like you can go for 300 miles like you can on an EV or 200 miles and just all electric, but that like little chunk of electric range, it's such a like playing with it. It's like, oh, I didn't use the gas today. Yay. Like, it's like, yeah, it's like a little gamification of driving your car. So it's kind of fun. I'm like, yeah, like, no, we must stop. I'm almost hitting the max. We have to find a place to charge up. So this one actually gives you 36 miles of all electric range, which is pretty good. Like, you can run errands around town. That's a good amount of EV range. So that was pretty fun. And I use mostly electric. I was kind of proud of myself. And now that we have a charger here, I could plug it in. So it wasn't like, so then we were battling.
Oh, you got a charger?
Because we have a plug-in hybrid. So I would like fight between whether my husband's was plugged in or his was, yeah. So we were charging them both. It's like, we're the little electrified family in the neighborhood this week. We were all sorts of environmentally conscious. I recycled more and everything. It was amazing. Anyway, so it has a 2-liter turbocharged engine, 455 horsepower, and 523 pound-feet of torque, so Sam says. Is that right?
That's what the calculator says.
Sam calculated three different numbers for me before the show, guys. I have all these scribbles. It's like, nope, not that one. Nope, not that one. So we're going with 523. It's wrong. It's Sam's fault. Okay. So it's a nice responsive engine. I mean, it's a fun car to drive. It's not like a sporty car, but it's responsive. It's quiet. You know, Volvo's sort of like a luxury brand, but not a luxury brand. Like, they have these really elegant interiors that are sort of like that refined. There's nothing flashy about them.
It's very Swedish.
It's very Swedish, like good quality of materials. And this is roomy. This is a 5-passenger crossover. And it had the crystal gear shift. The fancy gear shift. Yeah, which then also makes you nervous because every time, like, if I had a ring in my hand, my ring hit it or my, like, bracelets hit it, I'm like, oh, God, if I break that, how much does that cost? How fragile is that gear shift? I could not buy this because it's freaking me out, man. So it was...
Just to get a little sleeve to put over it.
I know. You, like, you need a little like sleeve. Like a little leather sleeve. Yeah, like you put the plastic over the couch that your grandmother like did 100 years ago. Yeah. You need a little sleeve to put over the
crystal.
Need
a shifter cozy.
Yeah, a little shifter cozy. That's what I need, because I every time, like, I wear bracelets, and every single time it went ka-clink, I was like, oh, God, oh, are you okay, little gear shift? I'm sorry. So I enjoy driving this. And the thing is, it's not cheap. So all together, this one ran $72,840. That is not an inexpensive plug-in hybrid.
Nope.
So you can definitely get cheaper plug-in hybrids out there. I feel like that the EV range, though, I mean, correct me, guys, if I'm wrong, that's a pretty decent EV range for plug-in.
Yeah, it's at the high end of what you can get today. And, you know, the one you're driving, you know, they just released a mid-year refresh, because if you got an early 22 XC60 Recharge, it only has half that range. And so they increased the size of the battery, gave it a more powerful electric motor. Yeah, that's, you know, 35 to 40 miles is at the upper end of what you're going to get from plug-in hybrids today.
Okay, so you're getting a decent range for a plug-in hybrid. You're getting an attractive car. It's beautifully appointed. It has a nice, quiet, smooth ride. It's roomy. It has that very essentially Volvo-y Swedish kind of thing going on. So it's an elegant car. I like it. I mean, this is, if I was looking for a, you know, not super luxury car, but still something that has that really high-end vibe to it, this definitely delivers. And I just, the material and trims, I've always been a fan of how Volvo somehow makes their cars look really, really like outrageous. I know 72 grand is not cheap, but they make them look much more expensive than that by simplifying everything. It's not like we've thrown everything we can at this car. It doesn't have, you know, four kinds of wood and chrome and this and that. It's very muted, but somehow they look really beautiful. And I'm a fan of that when they can pull that off. And this definitely does.
Do they have the wool seats or the leather?
I have the wool seats.
I like those. I like those wool
seats.
Which
I think they look amazing.
Yeah.
I worry about, I mean, if you have kids, I always worry about this with these. I guess maybe I had really sloppy kids. I mean, just to clarify, guys, my kids are.
You just had kids. They're all sloppy.
Because like my kids are like 18 and 19 years old now. They are no longer making a mess in my car. And my eyes still starts to twitch when I see fabric in cars and think like, oh God, one cup of milk. Oh God, one like chicken nugget ground into the seat. Ah, like I panic. Like it's kids make cars so dirty. So I hope that. I'm feeling like they should be, you know, hold up well, but, you know, that's always my concern. I'm a big fan of leather seats if you have kids, which sounds counterintuitive, but you can wipe everything off of them. It just
wipe
clean.
It off.
Wipe it all off. They get anything on there, it's okay. Wipe it off. Kid has an upset stomach, no worries. Wipe it all off. Your car doesn't smell like that for a month. So, all right. But, yeah, they're beautiful. If you don't have kids, go for it.
Yeah, we drove that one in – was it March or something when we were out in Palm Springs? Mm-hmm. And I really liked those wool seats. I thought they looked fantastic. They felt really good.
Yeah.
And it's nice on a really hot summer day when you get in, you don't instantly feel like your back is getting burned by the hot leather.
Exactly. It's not like searing a layer of skin off of your body.
Yeah.
So that was what I had last week. So I had the fancy plug-in hybrid from Volvo. This week, I have a not quite as fancy, but very fun vehicle from Mazda. I have the Mazda 3 hatchback, 2.5 turbo all-wheel drive with Premium Plus package in Snowflake White Pearl. I like that name, Snowflake White Pearl. This one, considerably more affordable. It is, the base on this is 34.4, but they put a little bit of stuff on this one, so it's actually 35.8, which is, that's downright affordable. It's small. I mean, it's not something you're going to pack the family into unless you're not often having the family back there, but it's a fun little car. Mazdas are just fun. Isn't that the thing? If you're a driving enthusiast, you should be able to get behind the wheel of a Mazda and feel like, yep, this is a car for someone who likes to drive and doesn't just need like an appliance to get them back and forth to the office or, you know, to just dump the kids at school, something that you enjoy driving. I had a couple of nice trips down into Boston to the airport in this, so I had some long drives, and it was nice that it was fun to drive on the highway, like really fun. But even in stop-and-go traffic, it's not torture. Like some cars that are a little bit more fun when you're kind of just cruising, when you're suddenly in stop-and-go, they don't modulate that really well, and it's sort of like, oh, this is uncomfortable. I just want to get where I can open it up. This one was actually even fine driving in rush hour traffic that I got stuck right in the middle in. So I enjoyed this. The only thing, you know, that I am not a fan of the infotainment system in the Mazda. It's not my favorite. We've discussed this before. It works just fine. I dislike. Sam loves. So I feel if you've listened to a single episode of the podcast, you already know this. it delivers that sort of fun Mazda spunk. It's like a spunky little car. It moves. You feel like if you're trying to accelerate on the highway at rush hour, no problem. Do it. It's not going to be an effort to get up to speed. And once you're up there, if you're trying to pass slower cars, it is absolutely a breeze to pass slower cars. The ride is mostly quiet and it's pretty smooth. They're resurfacing the streets in our neighborhood, however, and some of them are like driving off road right now. And all I can think, I'm like, oh, this God, this poor Mazda. Oh, good Lord. There's no way to get out of my house without driving over this. But you know what? It did pretty well. I only had to watch for the now 3-inch raised manhole covers. I'm like, I do not need to take the bottom of the Mazda off of the Mazda. Let's do a little Frogger and go around that.
Don't want to punch a hole in the oil pan?
No, I did not want to do that. Yeah. So, but even over that, which is ridiculously, like there's really dirt in portions of our road right now, just dirt. So it's kind of a mess. And it even handled a ridiculously rough road surface that you would hardly ever have to drive. It still is pretty composed and pretty comfortable and easy, which is something because you wouldn't drive over this road unless you had to because you lived here.
And the thing I like about this, you know, when they added the turbo option to the Mazda 3 last year is it comes with all-wheel drive. Yes. And back in the day when they still had the Mazda Speed 3, which was the last one with a turbo, I don't know if you ever drove one of those.
I don't think I ever got a chance to drive one, ever.
they had a tendency to turn suddenly every time you stepped on the gas pedal.
Oh, that's not fun.
Yeah, torque steer. Yeah. Torque steer galore.
Torque steer. Yeah. No. That was the olden days.
Yeah. This does not
everything,
have that.
Nope.
Everything has torque steer.
You can mash the gas and it goes in a nice straight line.
Yep.
You know what? I'm going to be that guy. The all-wheel drive versions of the Mazda 3 aren't, you can't get it with the manual transmission. And when they asked why, they're like, oh, that's, people don't want that. We're like, that's not true.
No.
I get to see you. You lying liars. That's not true. Yes, they do. Put it on there.
The correct answer is not enough people want that. There are people who want it.
Yeah.
There's just not enough of us to
but
actually
the front wheel drive.
There's Robbie and this other guy in Cincinnati.
The front wheel drive version, you can get a manual transmission, but not the all wheel drive.
But you can't get the turbo with the front drive.
Exactly. So once you have a niche, you're like,
yeah.
Well, we sell 15,000 of these. What's the take rate on manuals?
It's kind of hard to justify spending several million dollars to certify a manual transmission that you're going to sell 50 of. Yeah. Especially if you're only selling them for $35,000.
If you look against like the other vehicles that are in this sort of ID, like the BRZ, the GR86, I mean, the take rate on manuals is much higher there. And you can say, oh, this is a fun performance vehicle for those people. Those people would be like, yeah. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
That market segment is where manuals thrive. And it's where the manuals live now.
Yeah.
That sort of enthusiast, like, you know, 25 to $40,000 price range, but you know,
except most of those people aren't necessarily looking for a car shaped like the Mazda 3. They're looking for something that looks like a BRZ.
It does have kind of like that
Mazda 3. People still love that Mazda 3.
Yeah.
This has kind of like a bubble butt situation. It looks very wide.
Yeah.
It has a plentiful rear end. It may be, like, it looks fine from the side, looks great from the front, looks like a Mazda, but I was just walking up to him like, man, that is a very rounded, baby got back.
It's a cool little car.
It's cute, but I'm like, also, little bubble butt happening back there. I don't know how
bubble
I feel about
butt.
That. Bubble butt.
All right. I had a return visit from the Ford F-150 Platinum Power Boost that I had. Actually, back in like February, I had it back then because I wanted to try out Blue Cruise on the F-150. And we talked about it then, and it turned out that the software was not correctly flashed onto this particular vehicle. And so the Blue Cruise was non-functional. I let Ford know that the Blue Cruise wouldn't work. And they checked into it when they got the truck back and found the problem and reflashed it. And so they sent it back to me. And so I drove it around, did a bunch of highway driving with this thing. And compared to when we drove the Lincoln Navigator out in Arizona about a month and a half ago with Active Glide, which is just the Lincoln branding for Blue Cruise, this one was definitely better. When we were out in Texas to drive the Lightning a couple weeks ago, I talked to Chris Billman, who's the lead engineer on this stuff, and he said, yeah, they have been making some updates to Blue Cruise. One of the things that that I'd complained about, particularly on the Navigator, was a lot of false positives from the torque sensor on the steering wheel telling me, you know, put your hands back on the steering wheel. Even though my hands were on the steering wheel, I was just holding it very steady. They've made some changes there, so that was a lot less prevalent. I still got a few of those, but it was a lot less prevalent than it was when I drove the Navigator. In general, the system is getting a little better overall in terms of the Blue Cruise performance, but it's still not as good as Super Cruise. It's still, you can feel it. If you're watching, out over the edge of the hood and watching the lane markers, you can see and you can feel that it tends to wander a little bit more within the lane than Super Cruise does. Super Cruise, you get out there and it's rock steady right in the middle of the lane.
I love Super Cruise. And, it's so good.
And this system was still not a lot, but just enough that you can notice it. And of course, when you get to certain curves in the highway, it tells you to put your hands back on the wheel. And I've complained about the interface, the graphical interface for Blue Cruise. You know, it's
just
as
blue obvious. And then it's white.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, God, I guess I should have my hands on the wheel.
What am I doing?
It's not as obvious, you know, what mode you're in and what you should be doing. And Ford's aware of that. And I think, I suspect that, we're going to see some changes in that in future models. But overall, the rest of the truck, it's an F-150. It's big and brawny. I did a mulch run, put in approximately 650 pounds of mulch in the bed, according to the onboard scales.
Ooh.
I actually had a bag of mulch in the garage that I put out yesterday, so I didn't technically get it, but I had a Mazda and I was doing the mulch thing.
Oh, there you go.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I got like 10 big bags of mulch and put them in there and handled them no problem at all. This was the hybrid. One thing I did notice that I don't think I had really noticed before with this one or with the hybrid is, every once in a while, it would seem like, I don't know, wasn't quite sure if it was when it was engaging or disengaging the clutch between the engine and the electric motor. But you'd feel just a slight bit of jerkiness every once in a while. Like it wasn't completely smooth and seamless. It was fine most of the time, but every once in a while you could feel it kind of being indecisive, it seemed like. It also didn't get as good fuel economy as I would have expected. The four-wheel drive F-150 crew cab hybrid is EPA rated at 23 miles per gallon combined city and highway. I never got it to 20. I think the most I got it up to was about 19.8.
Wow.
Overall average for the week was about 19.5 or 6, which, is not bad for a big truck like this, especially, considering this is a Platinum with the big wheels and everything. But still, it's not great, especially, when gas is, even here in Michigan, it's, $4.25, $4.30 a gallon. If you're out in California, it's probably, about $62 a gallon now?
About 62, maybe 63.
No, it's only $61.75.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Sorry,
oh,
I didn't mean to exaggerate.
It's over $6 a gallon right now in my neighborhood for regular gas.
Is it really?
It's like $6.04, $5.90 something.
That's painful.
$5.90 something if you want to buy like cheap gas, which I refuse to do. I'm not cheap, low quality. That's
So I pulled up the numbers in fueleconomy.gov for the hybrid F-150 versus the Lightning. And one of the things, if you haven't gone into fueleconomy.gov, one of the nice things they have in there is in the comparison tool, it does an estimate based on the label numbers of what you would cost, what your fuel costs would be over 5 years compared to an average new vehicle. And the hybrid, if you were to actually hit that 23 miles per gallon, it would cost you about $2,000 a year more than the average of all new vehicles over 5 years. Whereas the Lightning, it will save you $7,250. So the net difference in fuel costs over 5 years between the hybrid and the Lightning is $9,250, which is more than the price difference between an F-150 hybrid Platinum and the Lightning Platinum. So the Lightning Platinum is about $8,000 price difference between the Lightning and the gas Platinums, and you're going to save over $9,000. And given that I didn't actually hit 23, I only got just under 20. That savings is going to be even more. So if you are thinking about an F-150, unless you actually do need to drive, or tow long distances, you really should be considering the electric version instead, because it'll save you a lot of money.
Yeah, when I did that price differential between my BRZ and our Kona Electric, this one gas was $5 a gallon for 100 miles, and it was like $18 versus $6. I was like, oh, Maybe I'm not gonna. We don't drive the Jaguar and the BRZ nearly as much as we should right now. Because gas is $6 a gallon. Every time I have to go get gas, I'm just like, oh, this hurts. This hurts.
Yeah. So that's the F-150. Oh, and the price on this one was about $81,000 for the 2022 F-150 Platinum 4-wheel drive power boost hybrid. So a little bit more than the than your XC60. But of course, it can do a lot more than the XC60 can as well.
You know, There's so much more mulch
you can put.
You know what? I'm fine with pickup trucks before everyone who loves a pickup truck starts like sending me death threats. But I've never owned a pickup truck because I don't have a need.
Yeah.
Like, I don't really need a pickup truck for the amount of pickup trucky stuff I do. But the F-150 Lightning makes me wish that I did.
Yeah.
It makes me wish I had a reason. Like, what's my cause? Why? What excuse can I come up with?
What do I need?
Well, need this so it's not completely just hauling air. Because I love it. And it's what you save on the gas, like having electric and being able to make it power your house. Yeah, I love this.
Well, especially for you living in New England, mm-hmm. you get cold winters. I'm sure you occasionally get some power outages in the wintertime.
I have once or twice had a power outage, and it is no fun when it is.
When you get an ice storm, it knocks some power lines down. Yeah,
it'll knock the lines down, and depending, I've had neighbors who've been without power for almost like a week and a half. At that point, there is damage to your house if you do not have a way of getting at least a little bit of electricity running through things.
Well, the ID Buzz will also have bi-directional charging, so if you want like a cool van, you can do.
But that's still
cool
2 years away, though.
That's still two years away.
Yeah.
But that's also, you can still haul things.
Okay, but why do I need a van?
I don't know.
Because you crime? Because you want something cool.
To solve crimes.
To solve crimes?
With my dog?
Yeah, with your dog.
You know, I was actually thinking the other day, I was reading something about the Toyota BRZ, and the same applies to the Subaru Solterra. You know, the four-wheel drive versions of the Solterra and BRZ are only rated at 228 miles of range.
Oh, you mean the BZ4X?
The BZ4X, BRZ.
The
BZ4X.
See how the name is just like
The BZ4X and the Solterra. And the Solterra only comes in all-wheel drive. There is no front-drive version of the Solterra.
Subaru.
So you get 228 miles of range in that thing. The base Lightning Pro with the standard range battery is 230, and it costs $5,000 less than the BRZ or the BZ4X, the BZ4X and the Solterra.
So it's almost like you don't even need a reason to need the truck.
It's the economically smart
option.
Choice. Yeah.
Yeah. So I just need to go buy one.
Ford, when it comes to trucks, they have the Maverick, which that's the vehicle. Every time I think about the Maverick, I'm like, man, maybe I need a Maverick.
Yeah.
Maybe I just need a $20,000 truck for mulch because it's like the perfect size for 99% of people who need a truck.
Yeah.
And for like home stuff and art stuff and band stuff, I'm like, this thing is – and then all the – I still have all the cut wood that I use for the thing. And I'm like, I've cut this wood already. I might as well just go buy the –
I should just buy a vehicle to fit the wood.
Exactly.
I had to use the wood to prop up something so I could paint it. And I was like, I need some slabs of wood. Oh, yeah, there's this wood. And yeah,
so it's already pre-cut for the flex bed in the
I already have. Where is it? I have the cup holder still that I 3D printed.
So you
3D printed a cup holder for it?
Yeah, I 3D printed a cup holder for it. I was 3D printing a box that said Engadget because it was an Engadget video, and it got 90% done, and then the 3D printer just went. It ran out of stuff, and I was like, "Oh well."
You might
throw it to trash.
You might as well sell the Jag and take what little you get for that and put it towards a down payment on a Maverick.
There you go.
Yeah, but the down payment on a Maverick is going to be a lot. I feel like everything.
Order a Maverick, when would you even get it right now?
Probably about 2024.
And what about the Lightning? Like, are we any better with the Lightning?
Probably about the same. Unfortunately, probably sometime next year. If you ordered one now.
Yeah.
That's the same thing with the
Same thing with the new BRZ. Like, oh, we're not making those anymore. We ran out. Like, what? Oh, about the Super and the Blue Cruise. I was driving the Mach-E, I don't know, a week or two ago. and with Blue Cruise. And I'd driven it before, also in Northern California during the drive program. And it has improved a lot. But again, it's not as nice as Super Cruise. But it has, like, just on the road, I'm like, oh, this is so much better. They're getting close.
Yeah.
Which is good. Which is, you know, at least improvements are good. That means they're working towards, you know, getting to Super Cruise level quality. Instead of just sort of like, you know, they could just put it out and like, well, we'll do an update in 6 months. I feel like they're like constantly doing little updates to that. So,
yeah. All right. Let's see what we have on the list. Oh, okay. So I also drove another car the other day.
What?
Yeah. On Friday, I had a chance to go over to the Nissan R&D Center in Farmington Hills, Michigan, where they had a pair of new Nissan Zs, one in blue with a manual transmission and one in red with an automatic. And I, of course, grabbed the blue one because that is the proper thing to do.
As when, one should.
As one should if you're going
to
drive a Z.
We can continue to be friends, Sam. This is good. Okay. Otherwise, stop recording. I'm out.
So, yeah. Wasn't that long ago that there was a lot of uncertainty if a new Z would even happen, you know, because Nissan's had some financial challenges in recent years. But last fall, you know, they unveiled the Z Proto and, you know, showed it to, or actually, no, it was 2020. Yeah, it was the fall of 2020 when they showed us the Z Proto. And now they're building it and they're going to start shipping them to customers pretty soon. And I had a chance to spend a couple of hours with one. And boy, is it good. It is really, really good. And of course, you know, the obvious competitor for the Z, you know, has been for decades the Supra. It's been Supra and Z. And I would say this time around, the Z is absolutely the one to get. It's based on the same basic architecture as the old 370Z, and there's no numbers associated with it anymore. Now it's just Nissan Z, unless you're in Japan where it's the Fair Lady Z, as it should be. So it's got the same 100.4-inch wheelbase, same basic suspension layout, but it's all been retuned. It's got different caster angles and stuff for a little better steering feel. But they replaced the 3.7-liter naturally aspirated V6 they had before with the 3-liter twin turbo V6 from the Infiniti Q50 Red Sport 400. So it now has 400 horsepower, 350 some odd foot pounds of torque. And, you know, because it's a twin turbo, you know, all that torque comes on pretty early. It peaks at about 1600 RPM. This thing feels great. And I love the way the new Z looks. You know, it doesn't look retro. But, you know, it's got just enough of the, you know, a few cues to kind of harken back to, you know, the original first generation Z. You know, it's got that similar profile. And even though it's on the same wheelbase as the 370, it's got slightly longer front overhang and rear overhang. So when you look at it in profile, it's got a little bit more of that long hood rear cabin feel of the first generation. Because those first generation Zs, you know, they had an inline six cylinder. The first and the second generation when they went to the 280 ZX, they had an inline six like the Supra had. But then when they went to the 300 ZX, they went to a V6, and they've all been V6s since then. So they've had a little bit shorter hood, but they've stretched that out a little bit more. So it's got a little bit more of that look of the classics. And I just love the way this thing looks, especially with the two-tone paint option, where you get the black roof and then the chrome strip that runs across the top of the mm-hmm. side glass. The interior, the one I drove was in Syrian blue on the outside. And then it had a two-tone black and blue interior, which looked really cool. I really like that color combination in there. Unlike Toyota, you know, they're offering it from day one with a manual transmission, so you can get a manual Yay. Or a 9-speed automatic. Same price, no price premium for either one. Absolutely go with the manual. It was a hoot to drive. It's got surprisingly good ride comfort, but then when you get into some curvy roads, you know, it just hangs on. The engine is really responsive. You know, it just feels really good, really stable and composed. You know, even when there's bumps in the curves, you know, nothing seems to upset it. I just had a blast with this thing. It was great. And it starts at $40,000. Like with delivery, charge, it's, $41,000 and I think $15 or something like that. Which is quite a bit cheaper than the Supra. You can get the four-cylinder Supra starting at about $43,000. And then, so they have the base sport model, and then there's the Z Performance, which has slightly bigger brakes and goes from 18 to 19 inch wheels, and has some options as standard equipment. And that one starts at $50,000. So it's an extra $10,000 to go to the Performance. And then they also have a limited edition launch version called the Proto Spec, which adds the you have the option of that same yellow paint that they had on the Z Proto concept and the sort of dark gold bronzish wheels that were on that one come on that only on the Z Proto, and that one's an extra $3,000 on top of the Performance. So all in, you know, for the max version, you're looking at $54,000 roughly. I highly recommend this. And, you know, unlike the controversial styling of the Supra, you know, I don't think there's anything controversial about the Z. I think it just looks great.
Is the same engine in all three vehicles?
Yeah. Same 400 horsepower engine.
Yeah. Just get the base engine.
You know. Yeah.
Just get the base one. You don't need,
yeah.
You don't need bigger wheels. Come on.
The bigger brakes, I think, would be nice.
Yeah, the bigger brake. I'm a big fan of bigger brakes, but
yeah. And I mean, they're not huge wheels. I mean, you're only going from 18s to 19s.
That's true.
So, then you get some other stuff thrown in there as well. It's, you know, if you're looking for a sports car, and you know, this is a proper sports car. You know, there's no pretense of, you know, some dinky little back seat that is not useful for anything.
Yeah.
You know, there's two seats. That's it. All done. You know, no 2+2 nonsense, you know. Not much cargo space. You got room for a couple of duffel bags in the back, and that's about it. You know, it's two people and, you know, enough stuff for a weekend getaway, and that's it.
Good. So. Good. I'm happy for Nissan.
And that's just fine.
Yes.
I'm sad because I was invited on that drive program, and it was while I was on vacation. And I was just like, oh. Well, I'll be in Hawaii, so I guess it's okay.
Yeah.
You can only complain so much there, Robbie.
Yeah. I don't like Las Vegas, which is where the drive was, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's where they did it.
So that's, yeah, I was like, I don't care where we're driving, just as long as the roads are nice. I don't, yeah. I'm very excited once it gets into the fleet and I can whip it around the Northern California windy roads.
Yep. No, it's a lovely car.
Lovely.
All right. let's get into some other stuff here. Lordstown Motors finally completed the sale of their factory to Foxconn. just a few days to spare before the whole thing would fall apart. And even with that, even with the $260 million they're getting from Foxconn, they've still burned through most of the cash that they had from their going public. And they say, you know, they want to build 500 trucks by the end of this year, but they still need another $150 million to do that, because I'm guessing suppliers are telling them, yeah, we'd be happy to sell you some parts. You just got to pay us up front. No 90-day or 180-day terms. You know, it's like,
you give us the money, we build you the
cash
parts.
On delivery.
Cash on delivery. Yeah, this is the expected end of this. This whole path it should have been anticipated. Lordstown has been a boondoggle since its inception.
I love that word.
Boondoggle. I love the word boondoggle. The idea that there was Workhorse, which was a company that didn't build anything. They built like one or two trucks that crashed and burned, and then they started Lordstown, but then Lordstown has to pay, it's the same people, but Lordstown has to pay Workhorse for every truck it makes. So the company, the people who made one company built another company because the first company failed, but the second company has to pay the first company some money. So it's like they're getting money both ways.
I know, it's insane. It's, and it's, yeah. to buy the factory from GM, you know, because GM had closed down the Lordstown assembly plant, and they were getting a lot of grief from the ex-president, you know, because, you know, the ex-president wanted to create jobs in Ohio because he needed Ohio, he needed to win Ohio to win re-election. And so he was giving Mary Barra all kinds of grief. And so, you know, GM said, okay, fine. We will loan Lordstown $40 million so that they can pay us $20 million for the factory and still have $20 million of working capital. And then, you know, when it was clear that they were never going to get that money back, they just converted that to equity when Lordstown went public. And, you know, I think GM, you know, basically long ago just wrote off that investment, you know, said, yeah, we're fine. Right. It was a small price to pay to get that guy off our backs just so
yeah, he it was marketing complain. Money. They took it out of the marketing budget.
Yeah, like, no, you know, and for marketing, I mean, that was cheap.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
So,
like, let's give it to these idiots and we'll move on with our lives.
Yeah. So, yeah, you know, I would be shocked if Lordstown Motors ever delivers a single truck to a customer, and especially now, you know, that Ford is actually shipping F-150 Lightnings. Why would anybody buy the Lordstown?
Because I feel like people who are behind the curve, like these the sort of startups that. We're going to be first to have this. Well, you aren't now, so yeah. You have a problem.
Well, not only that, but, you know, the Lightning Pro starts at $40,000. The Lordstown Endurance, when they did their last earnings call, they kind of slipped in there that they had raised the price from the original $52,000 to $65,000. So now the Lordstown truck costs, you know, more than 50% more than the Ford. But has less towing capability, less payload, and it's coming
going for the same market.
Yeah,
it's not like it's Rivian, where Rivian's going for this sort of high end, like adventure.
Yeah, so who, like, who the hell's going to buy it?
Yeah, yep.
On the plus side, though, now that Foxconn actually owns the factory, they have some place where they can build the Fisker pair. So, you know,
that's right. That is going to be the pair.
Yeah. So that's what that's probably the only thing that's ever going to get built there.
Yeah, I feel more like a pair is going to show up appear before. A pair appear before anything from Lordstown.
A pair
will appear.
It's like a
pair
will appear. Speaking of EV startups that have legacy automakers as investors, Rivian, their stock has been on a downward slide ever since the IPO. Spiked up right after the IPO to, like, I think it hit a peak of like $180 a share or something crazy like that. And it's been, you know, now it's down in the mid 20s. Ford owns about 10% of Rivian.
They did.
Yes.
Past tense.
Prior to last Monday, they owned roughly 10% of Rivian shares. Monday was the end of the lockup period. So for those not familiar with this stuff, when companies go public, there's usually a period of several months during which early investors are not allowed to sell off their shares. They have to hang on to it for a while. And so last Monday was the end of the lockup period for Rivian. So insiders and, you know, employees and other early investors could start selling their shares. So Ford immediately sold off 8 million shares on Monday for, I think, about $200 million. Rivian's share price dropped down to about $20 a share and then bounced back later in the week to about 26 or 27. And so Ford took advantage of that opportunity, that dead cat bounce, to sell off another 7 million shares this past Friday. And I would be surprised if Ford still owns any Rivian shares within the next couple of months. I think they're just going to look for any peaks in the market and use that to take any profits that they can still get off of that.
I think even if Rivian was doing well, Ford would sell them off, just because I think there was a time when Rivian and when Rivian was going to help Ford build EVs, and then Ford's like, oh wait, we can do this ourselves. We actually don't need. Remember the Rivian powered Lincoln?
Yep.
And then they're like, oh wait, we're not going to do that now. Never mind. Everyone slow down. Yeah, it doesn't make any sense anymore for Ford to have anything to do with Rivian, because Ford can do it on their own. Rivian is, you know, they're. I think Rivian would be doing better if it wasn't for the fact that, you know, the supply chain, semiconductor, all that stuff. I think they're...
I mean, that, to be fair, that probably did mess up more than a few companies. Look at the havoc that's wrought with companies like Ford, like actual legacy
like
OEMs.
Big companies.
Big
companies are having problems. Like
and
the
they're
two
struggling.
The two companies who are probably going to make it, which are Rivian and Lucid, they're having even bigger problems because they just can't... You can't compete with the time on the production.
You know, do you think those are the two that are going to make it? You think Rivian and Lucid are the two that are going to survive from the EV startups?
I think they have the best chance. Yeah,
they have the best chance. Fisker. And maybe Fisker. Yeah, I think Fisker. I think there's. I think Fisker is going to be very niche.
What about VinFast? Do you think they're going to survive?
I don't know. I think they're doing. I mean, they're doing well at Vietnam. I think we're still sort of a little early with VinFast.
So that one's a question mark.
Okay. Yeah, that one's a question mark. Okay. Just because, and also it's in another country, so it has. I think there's a whole other thing you have to deal with, like whether or not it succeeds here. It's like Alfa Romeo. Like, is Alfa Romeo going to succeed here? Well, if it doesn't, they have the rest of Europe to take.
They have Europe.
I think VinFast will probably and maybe anything. Who else is coming over? It doesn't matter. But yeah. Yeah, so we'll see. Yeah, but selling off all that Rivian stock, they're just like, they don't want to be anything associated with Rivian anymore.
Yeah.
Plus, they still got that mega Amazon order they got to build.
Yep. they got a whole bunch of vans to build for Amazon.
They got to make some vans.
All right. So we were talking earlier about the Toyota BZ4X / BRZ / whatever. And Motor Trend got one for, you know, we Nicole and I have both done the first drive on the BZ4X, and I think the two of you have both driven the Solterra. Motor Trend has gotten one for a little longer period of time, and they did some charging testing with it. And we already knew that, you know, charging was not as good, especially DC fast charging capability was not as good with the BZ4X as some of its competitors. And turns out that it gets even worse, especially if the temperature starts dropping. The link to this will be in the show notes, but Motor Trend published the charging curve, what they got when they tried to do DC fast charging.
Ooh.
And this was at an ambient temperature of 64 degrees, which is not exactly cold. This is pretty modest temperatures. And with the all-wheel drive one, which has the CATL battery, which nominally can charge it up to 100 kilowatts, they never got it above 65 kilowatts. And it only held that until about 33% charge. And, you know, all DC fast charging, you know, at some point in the charge curve, it starts ramping it down so you don't overcharge the battery. This thing started ramping down at like 33% state of charge from 65. And by the time they were down to like 90%, you know, or 92%, it was down at 1 kilowatt. I mean, it was just barely, they could not fully charge it from a DC fast charger.
And that's at a DC fast charger. That's insane.
So, yeah. So did they do this on like multiple times or just one time?
Looks like they did it one time.
All right. Cause that, I don't want to harp on Motor Trend. Sometimes I've gone to the charging stations.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes they go slow.
Yeah, sometimes it's so tough with these tests, with the charging tests, because I always try to go to the exact same station, the exact same location for my tests. And even then, I'll go with the same car like 2 days in a row, and one day it'll be like crazy fast, and the next day it'll be like, wah, wah. But still, this is a bummer.
Yeah. Well, I guess even in the owner's manual for the BZ4X, it says for the BZ4X all-wheel drive model, charging may slow down more than other models in weather conditions below 32 degrees Fahrenheit and may not be possible when the temperature drops to around -4 Fahrenheit and below.
Literally circumstances. It's all of winter. Not drive this vehicle. It's like good luck with that because it's too cold.
So if you live somewhere cold and want an all wheel drive EV, don't buy the Solterra or BZ4X.
Which is
that's horrifying that you couldn't charge it. I mean, I get things go sideways for EVs when the weather gets cold, but
and they always go slower.
They always go slower, but I'm like, not slow, stop.
Yeah.
No, charging for you.
It's not
going to
work. And especially if you charge, because, you know, I charge at night, and, you know, I've lived in
Kansas
City.
That's when it's the coldest.
Yeah, and I lived in Kansas City, it was negative 45 during the day.
Yeah.
So, if it was, you know, let's say it's negative 60 at night, do I just get up in the morning and my EV just doesn't go?
It's like, sorry about that, but I didn't charge last night because there was a wind chill. Have good luck getting to work.
You have to put the heater on the car. Like, you got to put it in the garage. And then, what is it, the diesels? You have to put, like,
the diesels. Would you put a little blankie on top?
Yeah, you have a blankie and warm it up.
Block heater.
Heat up a little. A block heater for your EV.
Block heater for my EV.
I mean, to their credit, even though they looks like they only did one test, they did drive it around for a while to get the battery warmed up before they went to the charger. But still, you know, I mean, 64 degrees, you know, is that's not much.
Not cold.
No.
Yeah, the 350 charger in my area is on the other side of the bay. So it takes me 30 to 40 minutes to get there every time I want to do a DC fast charge, just to make sure, like, you know, it gets at least close. Most of the time I don't really talk about the numbers in the article. But most of the time it usually will hit close to it. And I'm like, well, that's good enough. If it's 240 and it hits 230 or 227, I'm like, there you go. That's once you get over like 170, it, like, it doesn't even matter anymore. It doesn't matter how fast it's going at that point. It's so fast. You're just like, oh, I don't have time to go to Starbucks. Oh, I guess I better go drive some more.
I better go drive. Just drive in circles. Drive.
So the BZ4X has mediocre range compared to its competitors. It costs more and charges really slow. So,
oh God, Toyota.
What were they doing here?
I don't know.
What were they doing here?
Again, it's like I think it still goes down to like the teenager whose parent tells them to clean their room, and they're like, "Fine, but I'm not going to do a good job with."
They open the closet door and just shove everything in there.
Everything,
yeah. It's, I mean, it's technically clean.
Yeah.
It's technically an EV.
Yeah. Well, Nicole and I are both going to be in Texas in a couple of weeks with Toyota for another program. So I'm going to be asking them more about this.
Toyota Palooza.
Yeah. Toyota Palooza 2.
I thought about going to that. It's a long time.
I'm only there for 3 days.
Oh, they want me there for like a week.
Yes, you can.
You can.
You have options.
Yeah, there's different waves. There's a couple of longer waves and a couple of shorter waves.
I want to live with Toyota for a week, or there's I just want to do a normal drive program. I'll do a normal drive program. Thank you.
Yeah, I'll call them and say I just want to do the normal thing because I can't be in Texas.
Yeah, no, I did the same thing. I couldn't go quite that long either.
No, I got too much work to do,
and I wouldn't want to be in Texas for that long.
Yeah, I can only eat so much. I can only eat so much barbecue. That's what I was going to say. I'm like, I can only see so much barbecue.
That Diva Q who did the barbecue thing at the Ford F-150 Lightning, she's like a world-renowned barbecue pit master winner. And now I follow her on like Instagram, and I'm seeing all this barbecue all the time, and I kind of just want to have barbecue for a whole week. Because I look at what she makes. I'm like, oh, my God, what did you make this time, woman? That looks amazing.
Every Texas trip, I'm like, oh, barbecue. And then they're like, oh, we're going out to dinner at a nice restaurant. I'm like, no.
Well, if I just want
the barbecue.
If I go to another drive program in Austin, I'm going to have to do what Jordan Golson did when he did the Grand Cherokee 4xe program, which is he ordered ahead to Franklin's Barbecue, ordered a brisket in advance, and picked it up on the morning before heading to the airport, took a little cooler, and packed that in there. And then when he got to the airport, he got some ice from one of the restaurants in the airport and filled it up with ice. And then when he got home, he just sous-vide it to heat it up and said it was so good.
I know it's in the brisket thing. I've brought pie.
You can just eat it in the plane.
Well, there's that too.
Right.
Just on the plane.
Just break it on the plane.
Just reach in there. What are you doing? I'm eating my barbecue. Would you like
some? Can you imagine if you're like the guy sitting behind him and you smell this amazing barbecue in the plane and you just see Jordan like, he doesn't share? That's like not bringing enough for the whole class. Like eject that guy.
That's true. That's
keep the barbecue. Throw him off the plane.
Throw Jordan off the plane. Yeah.
You gone. Barbecue stay.
All right. Last one is the return of Scout. Do you guys both remember Scout?
My neighbor had one when I was a kid. My friend had one.
My friend had one. He got it stuck in the snow because he didn't go as fast as I told him to. And then I was wearing sweats, and we were going to the feed store, which is a very small town thing to say. We're driving through a field.
Oh my God, we also had a feed store.
And a scout to go buy feed for our sheep.
And wow.
He's like, I'm going to go through this thing. I'm like, you got to go faster. We're going to get stuck. No.
No urban cool. elites on this show.
No, we got to go faster. Or it's going to get stuck. And it didn't go fast enough. I got stuck. And I'm out there in like a t-shirt and sweats, like digging out. Because he didn't have a, he was like, I got everything in here but a shovel. We needed a shovel.
What you need is a shovel.
And then we end up walking to the rest of the way to the feed store is like, I don't know, like a half mile and sitting in the back because they felt bad for us. And then his grandfather showed up with a tractor and pulled us out.
It just gets more and more middle of nowhere. Granddad showed up with a tractor. I mean, just keep going, Robbie.
So, yeah. So every once in a while, I'll get an email from someone who's like, oh, you coastal elites, you don't. Oh, you penny, you know, I'm like, don't. Here, just listen to that story.
Yeah.
In case you're wondering the real Robbie, there you go.
Like,
For those not familiar with the Scout brand, this was an SUV and pickup that was made by International Harvester back in like the 60s, early 70s, and into the 70s. I can't remember, maybe even into the 80s before it was finally discontinued. And, you know, this was a competitor for the Bronco and Jeep and other stuff, you know. And, of course, International is owned by Navistar, the truck company. And Navistar was acquired last year, the year before, by Traton, which is the heavy truck division of Volkswagen Group. So Volkswagen owns the rights to the Scout brand. And they announced last week that they are bringing back the Scout brand for an electric pickup truck and SUV. That's, you know, there's a sketch that was released. They're targeting 250,000 annual sales. What do you think about this?
I like the SUV. The truck looks squished.
Yeah.
I know that it's just a sketch, so it could look absolutely nothing like this. But the truck, I'm not so much. But the SUV looks awesome.
Why
the SUV? Doesn't the truck look weird? The dimensions
looks
weird.
The cabin.
Why the cab looks cabin too
far back.
It's something. So move I'm hoping it. That's just a sketch kind of thing. I mean, they didn't deem it worthy enough to release it, so maybe it's more accurate than we think. But
You never know. Might not be that accurate, but yeah, I mean, there's definitely some cute design cues from the old Scouts. Hopefully they're planning to have a big frunk in this thing, to justify having that long hood.
I bet they do. I just remember the old Scout and it being like the car whenever we all had to pile in and go somewhere. My friend Pam and her dad, it was her dad's Scout, and we had to pile in. It was like, you could fit a totally illegal number of children and stuff in that thing. And it was like we all have to go together. Well, let's go take the Scout. Like, I want it to be like that still, but I'll be totally legal about how I use it.
So production is scheduled to start in 2026. So it's still, 4 years away. It could be pretty cool. Have an electric competitor to the, by that time we're going to have an electric Wrangler and some other electric Jeeps and probably an electric Bronco. So could be fun.
Yeah, we'll see. It'll be interesting to see.
It'll be cool. I think the SUV looks awesome. I love the SUV. So
yeah.
I'm in for that, not in for the truck.
Okay. All right. We have a few listener questions today. Let's start off with Big Daddy Henshaw. Hey, Wheel Bearings crew, which one would you choose, the new Z or the Supra with a stick? The Z is still on an old platform and seems kind of like a pig with lipstick on it. The Toyota Supra is more German than Toyota, but seems more modern. I talked about it. It's on an old architecture, but the Z drives thoroughly modern. It drives great. I would choose the Z over the Supra.
I haven't driven the Z.
I haven't either, so I can't voice an opinion. I like the Supra, though. I do, so I don't dislike it. I would like it more with the stick, so I think I would like it more. But I don't know if I would like it more than the Z. Ask me again after I finally have a chance to drive the Z, Big Daddy, and then we can answer.
We'll bring that one back for an encore.
Yeah.
Let's see. Oh, hold on. Let me... forget to do the word wrap on this so I can actually read it. From Coach Cabrera, is it recommended to charge an EV outside of your home? I see most people are parking their EVs in their driveways. What happens if it rains and the EV are plugged into their chargers?
Absolutely nothing.
Nothing happens. They had to build them so that humans could use them. They're built to, it can rain all you want. You can have rain on the charger. You can have it rain on the charge port. It doesn't matter. You just plug it in.
Yeah, rain and snow doesn't care. And you could even get some, like, there's different brands out there, and I'm going to forget that. There's, like, you know, you have tires that are, like, severe snow service rated with a little Three Peak Mountain snowflake on them. You can get chargers that are, like, severe weather related. So even if you live, like, in Alaska where it's freezing and there's chaos all the time, you can get a charger that can sit outside in the snow and be totally happy. So, yeah, you're fine.
It's moose proof. I don't know if that's true. No, it's fine. You can just plug it in. You're not going to get shocked. You're not going to get
They're all weatherproofed, and you know, if you look inside the charge connector, you'll see all the terminals are set way back. And it's the reason why these things, you know, have these deep sockets on them, so that the terminals are nowhere near the perimeter. You know, you'd have to like stick a nail or a screw or something in there to even contact the terminals and the connectors. And there's lots of rubber seals and everything. And they're designed to be weatherproof. So not an issue at all. You'll be fine.
Yeah. And I park mine in the driveway because my garage is full of stuff now.
Yeah. same for me. I don't own an EV, but I drive a bunch of them have the charger. The outlet is actually inside the garage, but the cord goes outside. And I've always charged the EVs outside and never had an issue because I have my Miata in the garage and my wife's car gets the other half of the garage. So we've had our
plug-in for like a year. So it's been through a year of New England winter and all the weather that we have, and plug in and outside, and it's never had a problem.
Yeah. Easy peasy lemon squeezy.
Easy peasy lemon squeezy.
All right. Last one is from AJ Gupta. What's the breaking point at which GM and Ford decide to buy a chip fab plant in Asia and ship it stateside to get a handle on chip production? And this applies to many ancillary supplier factories too.
I know there's automakers, especially recently, they're starting to think, okay, it's a worldwide network of supplies is. It ends up not working out so hot recently.
Well, it's not so much worldwide, but rather concentrated network. You know, having your suppliers be around the world is fine as long as they have multiple locations in different regions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if Ford and GM are going to buy a chip plant. I think their concern more is the same like with BMW and Mercedes, where they're looking into, we need to make sure that there's a battery plant, that we have a gigafactory near our production facility. Building chip plants is really, really expensive, and it takes a really, really long time.
That's the thing. Yeah. Even for the issues we're having right now, if they did it today, by the time they have it ready to go, the current issues are going to be sort of resolved, one would hope. It takes forever to build.
And it's not like these plants are for sale. You're not going to be able to just go to TSMC and say, I want to buy your fab and ship all the equipment to the U.S.
Sure, here you go.
And that is not going to happen. What is happening is, you know, all these various chip producers are building new fabs in the U.S. And also in Europe to handle the demand. So TSMC has a fab under construction that's Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Corporation. They're the biggest chip manufacturer in the world. And they're building a new fab in Arizona that I think comes online next year. Intel's got some new fabs going up in Ohio, and also in Europe. Global Foundries is expanding. Samsung's building another new fab in Texas. So everybody's expanding globally. They're diversifying the locations. So they're not all in one place.
Yeah, a lot of them Southeast Asia, where there's a lot of monsoon issues, and that's what kind of started the whole one place got messed up because of monsoon, and then it was just like a domino effect.
Monsoons, earthquakes, fires, trade wars, you know, all this stuff. It's never a good idea to have all that stuff, you know, essential components concentrated in just one place. And that's why they're also localizing production of battery materials, battery raw materials.
Got to have it everywhere.
Yep.
It takes a village.
It does. It
takes a village to build a car. But the village...
Takes a village.
All right. Takes a village. I think that's all we've got for this week. Thanks, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.